5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Welcome to Tech Talk. Yes, it is I, Stephen Scott, joined by an all-star panel this week as we discuss the Apple event that happened last week, Tuesday, in fact, where Tim Cook took to the stage and announced a whole range of new products. Are we excited about this as blind people? Well, let's get to our all-star panel and find out. Robin Christofferson is here, as always, from AbilityNet. Hello to you, sir.
Hi, two stars and a squib. Hi, guys.
Oof, right, that's not a good start. Okay, right, starting a negative, right. David Woodbridge from Vision Australia is here. Hello to you, sir.
Hello, and look, I'm fairly happy about the lineup, so no, I'm good about it.
Okay, are we talking here about the Apple lineup or the All-Star? which one are we talking about? And Robin Spinks is here from RNIB. Hello to you.
Hello there. Hi. So from my point of view, tick, tock, tick, incremental change, I think.
Oh, right. A mixture of views. Mm. All right, I'm interested in this. Right, let's lay out then for those who follow this show, and I know people do follow this show for the news. You know, not everybody's a geek out there following every website and every single announcement that goes. So I think it's important that we sort of lay this out. So let's begin at the beginning. And the first thing they talked about was Apple Arcade, which is the new addition to the App Store. This is a new subscription service that will allow people to play games, essentially any game they want, I guess, inside the range, on subscription. So instead of having to continually download games that cost money with all the in-app purchases that go with it, for $4.99, and that's dollars, but we assume that will translate to $4.99 in pounds as well, that is going to get you full access to the games. Now, I just wanted to start there because, I'll be honest, that was probably one of the first things I yawned at the event, thinking, as a blind guy, do I really care? Now, Robin Spinks, you've probably got the most sight amongst us. I think between all of us, all four of us, we've got like 1.5 working eyes, and you are it. So what did you think about this from a visual perspective? Because it is a visual thing, let's be honest.
It is. I mean, I do a little bit of gaming. So, you know, what's good to see is that the same thing, I guess, that happened to the music industry, a couple of key players are now having a go at doing that with the gaming industry. So trying to give you this super convenience, all-in-one payment, and then just choose the game that you want. So, you know, it's good from a convenience point of view. Quite how it will impact upon game developers and you know, title originators remains to be seen. But, you know, from a customer point of view, it's going to be more convenience. I think if I wanted to play a game, I'm not sure I'm gaming enough to actually subscribe to this, to be honest. Just don't really seem to use games that much. It's more of an occasional thing. So I think visually it would be about having a large canvas. So for me, it would probably be large iPad using this kind of service, or you know, TV rather than on a phone. Because it's just gameplay, typically, I think if you're visually impaired, is difficult on a smartphone size screen. If it's something like a, you know, Asphalt 8, it's a driving game, something like that, and you've just got to do steering and obstacle avoidance, I may be able to use a small screen, but I think it's more of a large screen endeavor. So good to see it. Am I super excited about it? I wouldn't say so. I think it's probably convenience is the big factor.
Okay, David Woodbridge, from the blind world perspective, does this appeal?
look, I can pretty much guarantee that none of those arcade games, and I'm probably sounding very negative, are going to be accessible anyway for voiceover users. I mean, who knows, you might be very surprised. However, I've got two sighted children who are 14 and 15, and they're Xbox One game console mad. So I can't remember the last time my sons pulled out their iPhone, iPads, or even their own Apple TVs, even with a console device in front of them, i.e. the controller, and actually played an Apple TV game, let alone an iOS game, on their iPad. So for me, which it translates to, was it $7.99 Australian a month? I just thought for the amount of stuff that my boys would be getting out of it, which at the moment going would be about zero, then I'm not spending $8 because I've got so many subscription services already. That would be just one that I can pretty much guarantee that my boys in particular won't be using.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. I actually thought you would say the exact opposite. I mean, Robin Christofferson, you've got kids as well. You know, I guess for the kids, this is going to be a great thing. And this is probably going to save parents a lot of money as well. So maybe it isn't really about blind versus sighted in this one.
I mean, it's limited for people with a vision impairment. But like Robin S. said, the canvas is good. You know, you could have a 55-inch TV and be playing Frogger on it. And I think the thing to remember about this set of games that are going to be on arcade is that they are family friendly, so you can rely on the content. They aren't going to be AAA titles like Call of Duty. They're not going to be first person shooters necessarily. They're probably going to be relatively gentle gameplay. The ones that they showed in the presentation were platformy, you know, kind of reminiscent of old arcade games, basically, which is why I think the title, perhaps. Yeah. So they've been carefully curated, and I reckon they'll be on the more gentle side. So that, combined with the huge screen that you could watch them on or play them on, I think there's some mileage for people with low vision. Funnily, something like Frogger, which is the first one they showed, would lend itself to audio. You've basically, you know, you're going through lane by lane across a road and things are coming from left and right. So I think that might actually work quite well. Not that it ever will be. But yeah, maybe if the blindfold guys or someone could do an homage to each of the arcade games by recreating them in an audio version, then that would be best for us. Mm. But yeah, I mean, the price was good. It's family sharing, so everyone can use them for the same price. There'll definitely be takers, but maybe not for us.
Okay, so general consensus is it's a complete waste of time for us. Right, okay, that's fine. Well, look, I couldn't care less, to be honest. I'm not a gamer in any sense. I bring it up because, of course, it was the first announcement. Mm. I do want to talk, though, about Apple TV Plus, because they finally launched or announced the launch date, which is going to be November 1st for Apple TV Plus. Now, I mean, obviously, it's a service, for those who don't know, it's a service which is essentially Apple's version of Netflix. But I think the difference here being is that Apple, at least for now, will only be showing on that service their own content. So it'll be additional content that you can subscribe to, as well as, of course, buying your movies and TV shows from the wider what was iTunes library. That's at least my interpretation of it. But you know, the big question for us is, you know, and it's the first question I asked everybody, probably each one of you at one point, which is, will it be audio described? Because if it's not, then what's the point? The good news is it will. And I'm hearing some interesting stats, whether this is true or not, but apparently each series will be audio described in 8 languages. Wow. If that's true. Subtitles as well, so captioning will be available. So, you know, again, $4.99, so that must equate for you, David, again, $7.99. Yep. Australian. Mm. This is good, and they kind of introduced this with a rather interesting program called See, which is all about blindness, which is kind of interesting. Now, I didn't see the audio described trailer at the event. I know it will be available on the Apple website. Mm. Just David, from your point of view, from off the bat on this, I mean, okay, so there's a lot to unpack here from this particular announcement. What do you think of Apple TV Plus?
Look, it's going to be interesting if you're a person who likes to, you know, watch straight, listen to television shows. Again, for me, it's another subscription. However, I do like the fact that, you know, we're getting
sort of fresh... Stop being so down on the subscription. Subscriptions are great.
I know. Well, I've just been through a whole process of, you know, downsizing my subscriptions, as it were. So, but look...
I've done that as well.
I know. So the fact we're getting
so much
new
money.
I know, tell me about it. But the fact that we're getting new content, like The Morning Show and that CTV series and so on, and the fact that it's going to be audio described, I mean, to me, that's actually really, really positive. The fact that you can watch it across your iOS, Apple TV, iPad, Mac, and I heard on iOS today that you can also log on apparently to tv.apple.com and also watch it with your favorite web browser, I believe Firefox, of course, Safari and or Chrome. So that's also going to be interesting as well. So, I mean, my wish would be eventually for them to extend the content, because I'd willingly pay $8, $10, whatever else a month, if I could actually look at the whole iTunes movies and TV content, not just the new content coming out. So who knows, maybe down the track it'll be a bit more expanded.
Okay. Robin Christofferson, or Robin C, as it appears you're going to be called through this episode, what do you think?
Well, I have to put my hand up here because I was one of those blind consultants that they consulted with on that C show.
Oh, so if we don't like it and it's terrible, we blame you.
Well, the thing is...
Actually, Robin, now you mention it.
Well, the reason why there's quite a lot of disquiet in this camp is that the trailer that they showed did not go across well. It did not have a good message. It was basically saying, you know, everyone's blind in this dystopian future, but don't worry, there's some people that can see, they'll sort it all out. And that's opposite of the thrust of the scripts that we worked on with the guys. So
that's your fault, Robin, is it?
Well, no, because in the intervening months, they, well, I'm hoping it's just the thrust of the trailer, and that's what they chose to kind of give the narrative. But basically, in the scripts that we worked on, that they were very attentive in knowing how to portray blindness properly, not to do it in a cringy way. What would a future look like where everyone can't see? You know, I was really positive about the, you know, I thought that this is going to be great because it's going to show a world which is fully functional. And it's a very hard-hitting series. Believe me, this is very un-Apple in the stuff that goes on. And I'm just hoping that the audio description will do justice to some of the more, let's say, on the edge activities that people do just because other people can't see what's going on.
Did they use a liquid level indicator to make cups of tea?
We had a lot of fun with the fact that in a society where nobody can see what you're doing, you can do whatever you like, and it would be perfectly acceptable because nobody knows what you're doing, and that's just life. But anyway, in the scripts that we covered, we looked ahead several series, so I'm hoping there's going to be multiple series of this. The children that can see were the aberration, and they had to keep it quiet, and it actually worked to their disadvantage. So it was, if anything, it was a hindrance to them, because it was so, you know, that the society was so well oiled, it was something that they had to deal with as a disability, really. So that was what it was like when we were doing it. And I'm just hoping that despite this trailer, that's what it will be like when it actually comes out, but we'll see. But anyway, TV Plus, everybody loved the fact that it was almost half the price of what they were thinking it would be at $4.99, and that the family sharing and the fact that the titles will be constantly renewed going forward from when it starts on the 1st of November. I think it's going to be hot. I think
Robin S, jump in on this. Is this good?
I'm backing this horse. I think this is a really smart move. If you look at what's happened in music streaming and then look again at what they're trying to do in gameplay and then look at the content, you know, the quality of the content that's certainly been visible so far. Sounds like Robin's had more of an insight into this than I have, but I think the quality of it looks to me to be very high. And again, you know, that's a stroke of genius on pricing. So I think everyone was expecting $9.99, and Apple surprised us by being more affordable. So if you think about the size of Netflix, it's an enormous corporation, probably valued, analysts say, about $190 billion to buy it. And there was talk at one point, you know, should Apple buy Netflix?
That's right.
And actually what's happened is even better than that, because we've got more choice and we've got a different option. You know, over 1 billion iOS users, that's a really big user base, big community to engage in it. So I reckon this is going to do well. Whether it kind of gains the same amount of traction as Apple Music remains to be seen. But yeah, I think I might well be up for this, and I'm very intrigued. And by by C as well. I've been listening to some sound bites on the journey towards it. So it'll be really good to just subscribe and take a look. But yeah, feeling positive, thumbs up.
And you don't use audio description, do you, Robin?
I do. I love audio description. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, although I've got what people would call low vision, although I'm registered severely sight impaired, I have, most people would describe me as having low vision in that I've got functional vision enough to walk around unaided. But when I look at, for example, stuff on a screen, I will often miss very significant elements. An audio description is just wonderful in layering that up for me. So it will describe, you know, a facial expression or something that happens that may be visually just difficult to see. I'm a huge fan of it. And in fact, I keep introducing fully sighted people to audio description as augmented viewing. So yeah, I love it. And I'd love to see more of it in more places.
Well, look, once you get the sighties involved, then things actually improve, right? Because if we got all the sighted people to listen to Netflix in their car or Apple TV Plus in their car, and then, you know, almost the audiobook thing, right? Because that's what happened with audiobooks.
You know, I think we've almost got to look at the audiobook revolution in terms of Alexa and Audible and people listening to audiobooks in their car. And
that's, you set off all the devices now, Robin. Well done.
Yeah, I've been listening to Paddington Bear with my 4-year-old. And let's just say that the scope for your imagination to just build the whole story out, I think, has been vastly bigger listening to it on a smart speaker than it would have been reading it from a page. So I could have read it in large print, but I just think, you know, Stephen Fry in particular just brings it alive, of course. But, you know, it's an amazing way to absorb content, whether or not you're visually impaired.
I just want to agree with David about the access to the iTunes movie hugely extended library, because that the big challenge for them, particularly at launch, is going to be limited number of titles compared to Netflix or Hulu or whatever it is. They're only going to have a handful. So if they could somehow in their monthly subscription allow access, discounted access, whatever, limited access to rentals, that would be massive, because then you've got the whole catalogue at your fingertips as well.
Well, I think we all kind of hoped that might be what Apple TV Plus would be. You know, it was going to get rid of the whole iTunes thing and everything would be available via subscription, but...
Eat all you want.
Yeah, but we don't seem to have got there yet. Maybe that's next. Maybe that's coming. I mean, obviously, they've got to do the deals to make that happen. And, you know, there's a lot of contracts still in play. You'll find, we've got Disney... Was it Disney Plus? Mm-hmm. Or Disney Life or whatever it's... What was it called this week?
Plus, yeah.
Disney Plus, right. So you got Disney Plus... I don't have kids, right? So I know nothing about Disney, right? I mean, I've watched those kids, but that was it. But, you know, okay, so Disney Plus has come along. That's taken a lot of content away, and that's going to pull a lot away from Netflix. I guess the big question here that no one's talking about yet is, you know, what will this do to Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu in the States and whatever else? Because, you know, we're starting to see this fragmentation now. Lots of different subscription options available.
Yeah, I was going to say competition is just such a healthy thing in this kind of market. You know, if we'd only had Spotify and not Apple Music, Spotify is a fantastic service, as we all know, and people will have their own views about which is better. But actually, the competition, the fact that you've got one growing and then one growing maybe less fast, you've got more innovation and you've got more diversification of service. The customer expectation grows. People want more. They expect more. If you've got one massive behemoth provider, then it almost seems impossible for anyone to come along and challenge it. So I think we all win when there's a competitive environment in this arena.
We should also mention as well that if you buy one of the new devices that we're going to talk about, or any Apple device between now and the 1st of November when the service launches, you'll get a year's free TV.
Yeah. Device.
Yeah, spend money on something and you get free stuff.
Using your Apple card.
Yeah, exactly.
Free bits.
Okay, just while we're on the subject, while you mentioned Spotify, this week we also saw the news, well, last week actually we saw the news, that Apple Music is available via a web browser now as well. I've had a go at this, I don't know if you guys have, but I'm seeing a few blind people on Twitter saying, wow, this is even more accessible than before. I mean, I'm not finding the new apps particularly inaccessible, especially on the Mac, can't speak for the PC, But yeah, I think that's quite good. I mean, and again, it makes things easier to access, doesn't it, David? And that's the point, like you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, they're really making it available on, you know, not just Apple stuff, but, you know, as long as you've got access to a web browser, then really off you go. It's fantastic.
Mm. Well, that can make a big difference, doesn't it? As long as they're accessible. I think I did find a couple of unlabeled buttons on that page. Not great to start with. Anyway, back to the event. Yes, the Apple TV event, if I'm honest, was probably the one that stood out for me most out of everything. Not that I'm giving away my entire thoughts on what happened next. But maybe I am. Let's talk about the other products then. So they brought out some things. They did bring out a new iPad. This is replacing the iPad for education, really. Same price point, $329. We hope it'll equate to the same in pounds. Yeah, we'll see. And dollars in Australia, yeah, what, about a million?
Yeah, 529.
529, wow. Mm,
yep.
I can't understand how that works. I don't get it. Does that mean that you've got like a really important dollar and, or pound is just rubbish? Does that mean? I mean, I we know the pound is rubbish.
I think we've got a really bad dollar compared to the US exchange rate. So everything's always more expensive.
I think it means that you get paid
here.
A lot more.
I'll be honest. I've put on CNBC a couple of times. I've tried to follow stuff. I don't know what anyone's talking about. But let's talk about the iPad. It comes this time with an optional keyboard. So they're kind of bringing it into the iPad Pro lineup a little bit. I guess for education, this will be good. And actually, I'll be honest, if you are thinking of jumping into the iPad world and, you know, you've got low vision, I mean, the iPad is great. Robin, I know you're a huge proponent of the iPad. You love it. Robin S, that is.
Absolutely. I mean, I was one of those people from day one back in 2010 who had the first generation and has... You know, call me an Apple sheep if you want. I really don't mind.
You're in good company.
For me, the biggest thing is that, you know, this is a product that's had a big kind of life-changing impact for me as someone with low vision. And I've worked a lot with teachers and classroom assistants in schools throughout the UK and beyond, where I've seen some great implementations of it and continue to see that. So, yeah, excited to see that being expanded. I think a bit more screen estate is always helpful, particularly if you're looking at something graphical and you need to magnify it. Or I guess for anyone that is using low vision to read from the screen, the larger screen is helpful. Probably not of much importance if you're primarily a voice user, but it's a great product. And that, I think, that price point coupled with iPad OS, which opens up quite a few more options for people. I think it will continue to grow in what is a crowded market.
But here's the thing, right? So you're right in saying that, and I know Robin C and David probably going to say, yeah, for blind people, it's not maybe the great. I don't know if it was in your mouth. You might not think that, but I assume that because I hear that a lot from totally blind people, right? But I think, just my view, I think this is probably what I would call the blind iPad. Because the new one, this one they've brought out, which is going to be coming out, I think, what, this week or next week? It's September 20th, I think, is the date it's due out. That is essentially a much smaller, well, it's slightly larger than the 9.7-inch, I think it was at
10.2.
Yeah, yep. So slightly larger screen. But the key thing is that keyboard. A lot of blind people like to use keyboards with their phones. And I think maybe the screen itself is irrelevant, but having that keyboard, having that portability. Now, I'm going to go to Robin on this because Robin Christofferson, I think you're the type who would say to me, I don't want an iPad. But this, would this appeal? I mean, you know,
so this is totally personal. I want my screen smaller rather than larger. And I would have loved for them to keep the SE around. That's officially killed now. And we'll talk about that in a while. But
or is it? Or is it?
Probably. But again, I know that. I can think of, like, you, for example, and somebody else in particular who are power iOS iPad users. So
well,
iPad OS. And, you know, they absolutely are much more productive with that larger screen, you know, the more real estate, and they've got all the gestures down. And if you add on a smart connector keyboard, so you don't have to worry about any latency at all, any battery life, because it gets its power from the iPad, that's killer. That combined with the myriad of keystroke hotkeys for iOS 13, that's a really good device for anyone. I think. And even if it's just the battery life, even if you want to go away for a very long day, you're traveling, you don't want your device to die on you, then the iPad will give you that as well. So, yeah, and at the price, that's amazing. And it has pencil support as well. So it's interesting that the entry-level iPad is now more pro than the Air, which is kind of the mid-range one. So it'd be interesting to see what they do there.
Yeah, there's one important thing, though, is the iPad is the only iOS device that you can run Swift Playgrounds on. So from an education and employment view, if you want to get young children, teenagers or adults into coding, then one of the advantages of any of the iPads, particularly the educational one for kids at school, is to give them a device that they can start coding on. So that's also really important as well.
I think that was one of the main drivers for the keyboard being promoted this time as well, because it's, you know, Swift Playgrounds is quite a momentous thing in itself, in that, you know, for the first time, you can have blind and partially sighted kids actually coding, and they can do it themselves under their own power. They're not needing someone to provide support to enable them to use the coding language. So very, very important element, I think, too.
Absolutely, because I just finished doing a workshop here at Vision Australia, and it was on coding. We had 8 iPads and we had 4 robots, and the kids were just sitting around coding for this little dash robot to run around and thread through a maze, and it was just absolutely amazing. So when people ask me what's a good iOS entry-level device, it's like, well, there is the iPod Touch. However, if you really want to get into good coding, then you can't go past an iPad, now the 10.2-inch screen. I mean, it's a really great little device. And people poo-hoo the fact it's got a, you know, the Fusion 10 chip in it, but it drives all the iOS software, including 13, quite nicely.
Yeah, and let's not forget how powerful a processor that A10 actually is. You know, compared to a lot of things out there, people tend to think of it as being outdated, but actually, in comparison to a lot of the competitors across the industry, it's still super powerful.
Absolutely.
Great value for money. I mean, it really is. $329, That's an Apple bargain right there. I mean, it's a pretty good price. And, you know, for education, as you say, brilliant. For entry level, for a lot of people. I mean, what is the iPod Touch coming in at? I mean,
it's $299 Australian.
Yeah, it's relatively expensive when you think about it.
It is. I mean, especially when you max it out with, you know, the full, I think it's 256 gig in it, and it comes in at like £400. And you're like, what? Really?
I would imagine the sales are fairly low, but fairly niche. You know, there's medical deployment uses of it, for example.
Well, that's right. And business love using the iPod Touch, you know, especially for a lot of business work. I think hotels use them for a lot of things. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, service industry.
It's probably much more business than it is consumer now as a product. Yeah.
Small children as well.
And kids. Yeah, exactly. Giving them a device. And, you know, for someone who doesn't need all the functions of a phone, although I would argue for the kind of money we're talking about, and we're going to talk about the new phones in a minute, but, you know, when you actually get into it, if you really were looking at the price, you'd probably just go for a new iPhone, really, than before an iPod Touch. Why would you not, you know? It's like 50-100 quid of a difference, potentially. Okay, well, look, before we get into all of that, we're going to talk about the Apple Watch that's been launched. We're also going to talk about the new phones as well, and then our final thoughts on the event overall. That's all to come. It is our all-star panel here on Tech Talk this week. Very pleased to have David Woodbridge from Vision Australia, Robin Spinks from RNIB, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, and me, I just sit here. We're going to get into more conversation in a minute. But before we do that, Robin Christofferson has put together a little review of one of his favourite features of iOS 13, the new version of Apple's operating system for iPhones. We're going to talk about this feature in a minute in more detail, but I want to get Robin's take on this first, and why he thinks this feature, even though it's kind of not really built for blind people, could actually be a major boost to our lives as well.
Let's have a sneak peek at voice input and voice output at the same time on your iPhone with iOS 13's new voice control. Do they work together? Yes, they do. Will you be able to do everything by voice? Pretty much. Let's have a look.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
So, I've got my iPhone going into the mixer here, so we should be able to understand it, and I've slowed down the speech. So, at the moment, we don't have voice control running, but we do have voiceover running. If I flick left and right.
Soundscape. Lazario. Double tap, voice stream reader.
Okay, so we've got icons on the home screen. Let's use Siri now. I'm not going to touch the phone anymore. Let's use Siri to open up voice control. Hey, Siri. Activate voice control.
Okay, I've turned on voice control.
Now I'm going to have to whisper when I don't want her to hear me, because she's listening the whole time now. Go home.
Home messages.
Now
double tap to open. Use 3D touch to show home screen actions.
Swipe right.
Calendar. Friday, September 6th. One new notification. Double tap to open. Use 3D touch to show home screen actions.
Now if I want to shut her up, the magic tap will hush her up. Let's do that now. Two fingers swipe up.
Messages. Calendar. Friday, September 6th. One new notification. Photos. Train line. App store. Amazon Alexa.
Two finger. Single tap.
Lazario. Soundscape.
There you go. It's hushed her up. We could do a play pause with a two-finger double tap. Two-finger double tap.
Up the price.
I don't think they would do that because they already have driven up the base price.
That's Accidental Tech Podcast, guys, in case you were wondering. Really powerful stuff. Now, you can't change voiceover settings. You can't access the rotor settings, but you can do gestures, and you can obviously tell it to open up the settings and go in and do it that way. So we're still on the home screen. Let's tap on Downcast to bring up the podcast app. Tap Downcast.
Downcast. Edit. Button.
Two-finger swipe up.
Edit. Button. Podcasts. Refreshed an hour ago. Heading. Podcast player. 342. The opposite of con. Button. Find podcasts. Search field. Unplayed. Heading. The Archers, 2 unplayed, last published yesterday. Dot 2 dot 5 unplayed, published today.
Single tap.
Accessibility, 1 partially played.
You heard dot to dot being announced there. That's a good podcast. Okay, let's go into Tech Talk, for example. I know that's there on the screen. Tap Tech Talk.
Tech Talk is a podcast and radio show for blind and partially sighted people who are interested in accessible technology. Find out about the latest products from specialist equipment to off-the-shelf solutions.
Swipe
get involved
right.
Or join the conversation by emailing 292, accessibility sounds in office, emails, and hashtag Ask Tech Talk. Status,
tap
audio,
292.
Downloaded, partially played, duration, 57. On this week's Tech Talk with Stephen
two
and Robin,
finger,
we cover more
tap.
Listener emails. Robin has more access.
Now I know there's a play button on here. Tap play.
Yeah, just more feedback, basically. It's a good
tap
thing.
Tap pause.
Yeah, well, that's one.
Play button.
Okay, finally, let's look at dictating text. So if I tap back.
Podcasts. Back button.
Tap podcasts.
Edit.
Back
button.
On the home screen now. Swipe right.
Podcasts. Refreshed an hour ago. Heading.
Swipe right.
Double tap to refresh our podcast player. 292. Accessibility sounds in
swipe
office.
Right.
Emails. And hashtag ask tech talk. Find podcasts. Search field. Double tap to edit. Actions available.
Double tap.
Search field. Is editing. Find podcasts. Insertion point at start.
Stephen Scott.
Stephen Scott.
Tap search.
Search results. No results.
Aw, sorry, Stephen. Now, so far, I have just been saying commands, which are the finger gestures, and that's an easy way of remembering it, like two fingers swipe up to read the whole screen. Now, you can also use the word voiceover at the beginning, and it will try and do that voiceover command as well. So let's give that a go. Go home.
Messages. One unread message. Double tap to open. Use 3D touch to show home screen actions.
That's the top item on the screen. Voiceover. Read all.
Messages. One unread message. Calendar. Sunday, September 8th. One new notification. Photos. Camera. Slack. Clock.
Voiceover.
10:45 a.m. Trains.
Voiceover. Select mail.
Doc. Mail. 15 unready mails. Double tap to open. Use 3D touch to show home screen actions.
Voiceover screen curtain.
Screen curtain off.
Voiceover screen curtain.
Screen curtain on.
and you can go into the voice control settings and you can change, you can customize all of the commands that you can use, and you can add new ones as well. So give it a go. So that's how you can operate your phone by voice with voice output as well. It's pretty cool. Back to the studio.
Well, look, thank you for that, Robin. Really appreciate you going to the time to do that and showing off how voiceover and voice control works together. I'll be honest, I can't see the application myself, but that's because I'm thinking about it from a work perspective. And in a work environment, being able to just talk to your phone all the time or having it listen to you all the time could be problematic, because other people will be saying things, you'll be saying things, and it'll just be listening and acting on all of that. Whereas at home, maybe, if you're a home worker or you just live at home, maybe you're not working, then this could be of interest potentially. But I'm very intrigued by it. David, voice control with voiceover. Is it something you'd use?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, I've been using it because I'm one of the beta one of the beta testers for it. And I was washing up the other night at my kitchen sink after my lovely son had made an awful mess, and I thought, oh, I'm going to listen to one of my Audible books. So I enabled voice control. I then navigated to Audible. I opened the appropriate book I want to listen to. I flicked down, so to speak, using my voice down to the play button, or just asked the voice control to press the play button, and then started listening to it. And then I could actually then put the voice control to sleep because I was finished talking. And then when I was finished washing up, I woke up voice control, told it to press the pause button to stop the book playing, told it to go back to the home screen and lock my phone, and it was absolutely brilliant. All hands-free, voice control input and output, absolutely lovely.
I get very excited about this kind of thing, and I think it has massive potential. So I was with a group of teachers just a few days ago demonstrating what you could do with voice control. What was astounding for me was that I expected people to actually know about this stuff, and many of them didn't. And they said, look, this is new. I've not seen this before. This is pre-iOS 13 beta. And just how much it can make a positive impact on your productivity. So, for example, we were writing a paragraph about, as a geography lesson, we're writing a paragraph. And rather than typing it, I was able to just teach them how we do chunking, where you create in your head a little block of text and then you speak it, you know, in an articulate way, and the device picks it up, and you hit, you know, have a full stop period, and then you carry on and do the next part. And they were astounded by the fact that it just worked incredibly well. I think it's an example of where iOS actually serves us up something that pulls ahead of the other guys. I think it's just so nicely integrated and delivered, and there's huge potential to use it in your personal use of the device, and work use, and also in education. So yeah, a big thumbs up from me. I think this is a genuinely helpful new innovation.
And let's not forget as well, the main feature on iOS 13, since we're mentioning it, is that the accessibility menu is now part of the settings. So when you go into settings in the app, then there you go. You've got accessibility in that main menu. You no longer find it under general. And that's a key point.
Which is really significant, because that is accessibility moving closer to the heart of the experience, which is what all of us want.
Well, let's talk about the Apple Watch before we get to the phones, because the new Apple Watch was announced, Series 5. I'm going to just throw this straight to you guys. Any of you particularly keen on the Apple Watch?
I love it. This feels like an incremental update. I mean, I love it for, again, some low vision specific stuff. So I love being able to be, you know, on a stage or on a panel and check the time without it being very apparent that I am clock watching, because a conventional watch, I would need to move it much closer to my face and it could appear rude, that guy's checking the time. Whereas I can glance with a super extra large watch face, I can glance at it, or I could use haptic time, you know, to tell the time, but also using it as a controller for slides. So I'm able to use it to operate my slides in a presentation. Love that. And then just the general health and fitness monitoring that it's allowing, which I'm paying more and more attention to as I continue to use it. You know, step counts, activity levels. It's easy to become slightly obsessed, but I think overall it has been a really positive thing.
Yeah. I've never had that experience, I must admit. Every day I get the, no, maybe today, and my watch said to me the other day, maybe you could try a bit harder today. And you're like, yeah. And at that point, you want to throw the watch out the window and say, okay, let's see how fast you go now. David, what do you think?
Look, I think the new Series 5 looks very interesting. I like the fact that you've got the always-on display, so people that want to glance directly at the time or the complications, because they've lowered the refresh rate on the screen, so you can actually have a glance at it whenever you need to. So still getting 18 hours of battery life, which is fantastic. The really important one for me too was also the international emergency SOS calling. So if you're a traveler, travels overseas, and you don't know the emergency number, your Apple Watch will actually work it out for you and dial the appropriate emergency number. So I think that's an absolutely fantastic feature for all the different countries that are supporting it.
But hang on, so that was interesting. They said at the event that you could do this even without your phone nearby.
Yes.
So am I right in saying then that they've dumped the whole GPS-only watch? Are they all cellular now?
No, they're both, but they were just mainly focusing on the cellular version. So I'm assuming the cellular version of the watch, I wonder if they've done a deal with the carriers in different countries saying that if there's a cellular Apple Watch and it needs to do an emergency phone call, then let the phone call go through on the appropriate carrier. I'm assuming that's what they need
and
to
I
do.
And I think the same would work with the iPhone, because, you know, it's not a given that the country that you're in, your cellular phone package supports emergency calling. But I think that's been escalated so that will always go through 150 countries. And if you've got your phone in your pocket or your backpack or something and you're being assaulted and you want to do it through your watch, because that's so convenient, just pressing and holding the dock button or the side button, then that will go through. So I think it would work in the same way with both.
Although it's always quite awkward to place a call with Siri. I'm just thinking as someone's trying to beat me up. It's like, hang on a minute, can you just give me a second until I hold in this button and then just make sure I can hear what this is asking me to do? I must admit, I've triggered emergency calling a couple of times on my phone by accident. You certainly don't miss it, that's for sure, because it really is loud when it starts. I mean, even the noise alone would terrify someone away. And that's one of the other things about this. I mean, they are focusing on safety and security. But yeah, you know, the point made about health as well, that's a really important one. And I think, you know, we don't have any women on the panel here with us today, but, you know, I think that there are a lot of things in this, especially around female tracking your period, for example, which I think is a very important thing. And again, thinking about this from a visually impaired person's point of view, this kind of information, being able to track that using your watch, which is accessible, is brilliant. I mean, that is an incredible feature. So that's an OS feature. That's not this watch-specific feature. All watches will have that option. But it does show, again, that commitment to bettering your availability of health information.
Yeah, I think both of those points, you know, both of those examples are just, you know, indicative of devices and ecosystem becoming ever more personal and ever more helpful in all sorts of ways that people might not imagine or they might not think about regularly. And it's a great thing to see.
And also there's a significant security or privacy angle here. And in recent days, there have been several articles about third-party cycle tracking apps that are actually selling that information on.
Yeah,
and that's not good. And in some cases, you log your sexual activity as well and that sort of thing. So, you know, this is ultra-personal stuff, as Robin was saying. So I think
there won't be much written in mine.
it's always a slightly safer bet or a significantly safer bet. So absolutely. And just on the video that accompanied or that introduced the Series 5 watch, there were several disability-related segments within that video. There was an autistic person who used AirPods on their watch as they were running to help them not be distracted. There was a hearing impaired person. So there, you know, there is a significant disability as well as more general health angle, and obviously about fall detection and stuff like that. So we shouldn't underestimate the power of this watch. And it's still not just the best-selling smartwatch in the world, it's actually the best-selling watch in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think one of the key things that stood out for me at that announcement, the new watch is coming out, Series 5. Series 3 price has been dropped to $199. That's dollars. Again, will that translate to pounds? We shall see. And who knows what? I mean, $8 billion Australian dollars, obviously, for David. but it is kind of like, right, okay, that's interesting, considering, you know, the Samsung, Fitbit, who are also providing watches now at that kind of price point, getting a Series 3 watch for that kind of price. Yeah, that could be interesting. Okay, let's move to the phones, because we don't have a lot of time left, and I want to focus on the new iPhones. So two, essentially, three phones, I guess, but ultimately two. The new iPhone XR, which is now called the iPhone 11, that has been brought out with glass back. It's got a double dual camera on it. It's got the liquid retina display again, 6.1-inch screen. And it's available in various colours, which I couldn't tell any of them because I'm colourblind. But, you know, they all looked very nice, I'm sure. Also, we saw the iPhone 11 Pro, which replaces the iPhone XS and the XS Max. They are now classed as the 11 Pro and the 11 Pro Max. Big difference in both phones. A lot of people swooning mainly over the camera in the iPhone 11 Pro, which I think was ultimately the biggest feature in there. And you're getting a lot for your money in terms of camera. And, you know, a wonderful OLED screen. In fact, was that an OLED screen? It's a Retina screen. Or no, what do they call it?
OLED on the Pros.
Yeah. It is OLED, right. And it's XDR, as they call it, which is the same technology that's in the new Mac displays. Okay. You know, without going into all the specifics of these, I mean, that's essentially it in terms of the updates. But, you know, for a blind person, Robin Christofferson, do we want one of these?
I think that the camera, I mean, obviously the camera improvements all the time and machine learning behind the cameras to help you take a better photo will also help with OCR, object recognition, maybe seeing AI and the like will get a boost in their performance. On these new devices.
Not much,
I don't
though,
know.
Really, surely.
Who knows? Let's see. But the thing that I'm relatively interested in is the fact that these new cameras with the wide and ultra-wide ones in the 11 and 11 Pro actually take a much larger photo. So as a blind person, say you had the task of taking the photos, I'm not sure why you'd delegate it to the blind person, but let's just run with it for a second. You can then take those photos. It does a lot of clever stuff automatically, which I'm all for, including this new night mode, which again, Android has had for a very long time, but it automatically kicks in, which is what I liked the sound of, because you don't know when to turn things on or off or when to slide sliders. You just take a photo and it will do its best. But then post taking the photo, if you've framed it wrong, then the photo actually can be expanded out to a much bigger canvas and somebody else could reframe it and crop it for you, etc. You can change the focal length post taking the photo, etc. So, you know, as long as you've got a bit of sighted support after the effect, after the event, then you can potentially take better pictures. But yeah, I mean, as a blind person, I'm not really excited about any of the new display functionality or the camera, etc. But the machine learning, I think, has some potential.
Robin S., I know you're going to jump in this in a minute, but let's get to David. What do you think about this? Is this exciting news or could you care less?
Look, I think the iPhone 11 is a good replacement to the iPhone XR. It's a, you know, it's a bump up. It's an improvement. What I'm looking at, though, would be intrigued about is the 120 degree field of view, which I'm assuming would hopefully work when you're doing a video streaming service like Aira or Be My Eyes. Because I know
that's interesting.
Yeah, because I know in the smart glasses, Aira talks about the 120 field of view. So I'm just wondering if that would work with the camera in the iPhone 11, would you necessarily need the smart glasses if the camera's going to do it all for you?
That's a very interesting point. Robin S., what do you think about it all?
Well, people may know that I love taking photographs and sharing them. And actually, I use the camera a lot as a low vision device. So I was just checking yesterday. I actually used the camera 17 times just during yesterday as a low vision device. That was to read something either on a menu or a label or a sign. And, you know, all the time I'm using it to snap something, zoom it up a little bit to try and enable me to read it when I'm out and about or when I'm traveling, you know, in all sorts of environments. So to that extent, you know, the smartphone for me is an assistive device as a video magnifier. That's one of the central functions it performs. So I am very encouraged by the extension in optical zoom. That would be one of the main things that would interest me. So 4x optical zoom. And then also from the point of view of capturing audio, being able to zoom audio as well. That was another feature that attracted me. I think other than that, it's about just a small increment in performance. It's not going to be hugely significant.
Although one thing in the iPhone 11 Pro and the Max was the extra battery life. I mean, to me, that's quite attractive for the 4 hour for the Pro and was it 5 hours for the Max? That's really intriguing.
5 hours. Mm. Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, I think all of us on this call travel a lot and we inevitably get caught up in situations where you're on a train or a bus or a vehicle of some kind and there is no charging capacity and you reach for your trusty battery and lo and behold, you've exhausted it. You know, I got caught in that situation the other day, so it would be welcome having additional battery capacity without a doubt. Apart from that, not that remarkable in terms of an upgrade. I'm sure there's a bigger one around the corner.
One thing I've never had the chance to ask somebody who has an OLED phone, so the XS or XS Max, does turning on screen curtain, because it's OLED and there's no backlight, does that revolutionise the battery?
No.
No, I don't think there's any major difference.
That was the promise of OLED. Yeah. That would be the only reason why myself as a blind person would go, you know, all other things equal, would go for the Pros if it had much better battery life with the OLED, which only lights up pixels that are needed. So, yeah.
Also, so let's talk about price here. So the iPhone 11 is coming in at $699, starts at $699, which is an interesting price point. And, you know, there was talk of it coming down to that level, not quite as low as, say, the Pixel 3a, which is seen as the entry level. But then we don't, I guess, have that entry level, or do we? We'll get to that in a second. The 11 Pro is starting at $999 and the Pro Max is at $1099. Again, dollars hopefully translates to pounds, we shall see. Yes, of course, $8 billion for David in Australia. There is an entry level, though. There is the iPhone SE may be dead. I don't know if it is, Robin, I'll be honest. I know you said at the start it might be. There's talk of it maybe making a reappearance next year, but it may be in some other form. For example, the current iPhone 8. The iPhone 8, which is still available, starts at a bit more a respectable $449. So, you know, what that has in comparison to the others is Touch ID. And for a lot of blind people who don't really care about the screen but just want the function, maybe the iPhone 8 is the new blind phone.
I think that the 8 is a startlingly good phone. And if you're coming from the 6, 6S, 7, it has sufficiently new things for it to feel like a really good advance for you. So it's got wireless charging. It's got a really sexy glass back, which I really, really like. It's a bit faster. So, you know, that to me is, and it's got audio coming out of the earphone speaker as well. I don't know if the 7 had that. But it's, you know, it's a brilliant phone. Now, that I've heard of the rumours about a new revamped SE in the spring, potentially. But because it wasn't called out, and they pretty much called out the whole line now, with 8 at the bottom, I have a horrible feeling that they're not selling it anymore. And that would be really odd to not sell it for 6 months and then to bring it back. So I don't know. I hope they do, because I actually would probably go for that. I love that form factor. As I say, small screens, I like. So,
well, the rumour is that it's not going to come out in that form factor. It'll come out in an iPhone 8 form factor. They're just going to basically use up what's left of the iPhone 8 parts and turn that into a new SE 2.
Got you.
Essentially.
Yeah. Well, they're carrying on selling the 8, whatever they call it, as long as they carry on with one in that form factor with a Touch ID button, a home button, until the fabled underscreen Touch ID comes along in a couple of years' time.
Okay. Right, before we go, just a quick round table very quickly. Out of 10, what's your marking for the event and favourite feature? Robin Christofferson, go.
7 or 8 out of 10, simply because there wasn't a huge amount in there, and there wasn't another thing, one more thing. Mm. And my favourite feature, pass.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't want to go without saying how grateful I am in general to Apple. So just because this event didn't curl my toes, that's a personal thing. Every single day, I'm grateful for what Apple has done for us and for the whole industry as well. They've kicked accessibility and inclusive design onto a whole new plane.
You're so nice. David Woodbridge, out of 10, favourite
feature? Yeah, look, I'd say 7 or 8 out of 10, like Robin S. Sorry, C. getting Robin's confused now.
S-E, yeah.
As, yeah, that's right. Exactly. And look, probably my favourite feature would have to be the fact that we didn't mention is the fact that you can now mix and match your Apple Watches with your bands. So you don't have to buy the watch with the band. You actually get a choice. So for me, that's one of the greatest features now, that you can actually mix and match your bands and your new Apple Watch.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I saw you tweeting about that the other day. Yeah, okay. Robin S.
For me, I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10.
And well, that's very specific.
I'm going to echo Robin, because I think the point is not made often enough. I think that Apple have set the pace on accessibility for the industry. And like Robin, I feel grateful for that on a daily basis. And, you know, I think we can't underestimate the impact that has. And it also has compelled so many other players to make positive changes. Standout features for me would probably be more personalization in terms of the items we spoke about, not least the international SOS truncating. None of us know the moment when that could actually be a genuine lifesaver. And I'll jump in with the extra optical zoom on the Pro.
Okay, all right. Well, for me, it is going to be a 5 out of 10. I was generally yawning through most of it. I echo all the sentiments about Apple, because frankly, I think in a lot of ways, a lot of things I do now, I couldn't do without these devices. So, you know, and the more vision I lose, the more I appreciate that. So, yeah, I agree. But I also, you know, put that out to Google. I put that to Microsoft as well, and I think that those guys have done really well. Amazon, yeah, we're getting there. As for favourite feature, I think it's going to be Apple TV Plus and the audio described content, which they're really working hard to make sure that all that content is accessible, it's signed or captioned as well. So that is it for me. Guys, it's been great having you on this week. Thank you so much for giving us your time. All-star panel for sure. Lots of interesting opinions. Of course, the show is all about you, dear listener. So if you want to comment, then please do. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk at any time. Of course, we'll get to your emails again on next week's show. For now, though, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, Robin Spinks from RNIB, David Woodbridge from Vision Australia. Thank you, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Welcome.
Thanks, all.
Catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Don't forget to check out and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for more great interviews and stories about technology for blind people. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk. See you next time.